And welcome, dear listeners. My name is Josh Haston. This is Israel Uncensored on the landofisrael.com radio network. We are broadcasting from Jerusalem. It is the 30th of May, 2016. I'm here with my main man, Binyamin Breskey, engineer extraordinaire. It's a beautiful day here in Jerusalem, Israel, the capital. Thanks so much for joining us here on Israel Uncensored. Get in touch with me during the week. You can reach me by Twitter at Jew of Zion, on Facebook, Josh Haston, and by email, josh@thelandofisrael.com. I appreciate all of your emails. We're going to get to some news today. You know, we've had some great guests on the last several weeks. We've had on Dan Diker from the JCPA. We've had on the one and only Carolyn Glick. And we've had many others, Gil Hoffman from the Jerusalem Post. There's so much stuff to cover. Sometimes I feel like we just need to talk, you and I, dear listener, just to express some of my thoughts and feelings about what's going on here without really interviewing anyone else. So today's show, we're going to be talking some news. And your feedback, of course, is appreciated. The IDF and security forces announced yesterday here in Israel that they arrested members of a Hamas terror cell near Beit Lechem who were involved in the planning of the bombing attack on the Jerusalem bus in April. If you recall, not too far away from where I'm sitting here in Talpiot, there was a bus bombing. Originally, they thought maybe it was some type of problem with the bus, an accident, who knows what. But lo and behold, it was, in fact, a bomber who later died of his wounds, who tried to murder as many Israelis as possible. So yesterday, the terror cell responsible for that, 19-man terror cell, if I'm not mistaken, they were brought into custody, and they were planning other attacks. This could have been extremely, extremely dangerous. Thank God. I saw some of the videos yesterday of the undercover forces going in near Beit Lechem into one of the villages and arresting these guys. Again, Hamas, terror cell. Some of them were involved in other attacks, shooting attacks earlier this year. And thank God they're off the street. Unfortunately, I said 19. That's a mistake. Actually, I think it was 6 suspects who were arrested. But it was 19 people wounded in that attack, let's be clear. The numbers are down statistically in terms of the attacks since October here in Israel, the knife attacks and the car rammings, etc. The numbers are down, which is a good thing. But the rock attacks and firebomb attacks on the roads in Judea and Samaria continue. Hatzalah, Yehuda Shomron, very important organization, first response organization. We interviewed Yudi Tayar from Hatzalah Yehuda Shomron a few weeks ago. They say that there are approximately between 10 and 15 reported, that's just reported, rock and firebomb attacks every single day, up to 30 each and every day. Just yesterday, a woman, a young mother, was traveling on a road near Tekoa, and her sister with two small children in the back seat came under a rock bombardment. And thank God only suffered minor injuries, treated for shock at the scene. And then the mother was taken to a local hospital for some other superficial, thank God, wounds. But it's a traumatic experience. My listeners know that I've gone through that as well. But it's happening each and every day. I get the updates from Hatzalah Yehuda Shomron all day long. And it's nearly hourly, these attacks. So with our new defense minister, Avigdor Lieberman, I think he's supposed to be sworn in the next day or two. Those who listened to my interview with Gil Hoffman, we thought it was a done deal. At least I did. Gil wasn't 100% sure. It was pushed off, and then there was a coalition crisis, which we're not going to get into. Take a little break from the politics here. But it looks like Avigdor Lieberman will be our defense minister. And the question is, how is he going to handle these rock attacks? Is there going to be a change in policy? Is there going to be a stricter policy, a punishment policy for those who throw rocks? Is there going to be a larger IDF presence? I mean, there is a significant IDF presence throughout Judea and Samaria at this time. But what is he going to do to stop these daily rock attacks? And rocks can kill. We've talked about it before. It has to stop. It's enough. People are being bombarded. People are being sent into trauma, into shock. And enough with the rock attacks. That's something I believe in extremely, extremely strongly, especially having to go through it myself. Mahmoud Abbas, Mahmoud Abbas, our peace partner, who heads the Fatah branch of the Palestinian Authority. He, just the other day, number one, he called for NATO forces to replace the IDF in Judea and Samaria, as reported by the Jerusalem Post, as part of any peace deal that leads to the creation of a two-state solution. Those are his words, not mine. But, however, speaking in Cairo before the Arab League, Mahmoud Abbas rejected the idea of recognizing Israel as a Jewish state. I don't need his recognition, but that is something, just a minimal requirement that the Israeli government has in order to start talks. Maybe it's for the best that he doesn't recognize a Jewish state of Israel. That way talks won't happen, if that's really the idea, the government's minimal requirement. That way we won't go down the road of another failed peace process, negotiation process, etc., which will only lead to another round of Jews being murdered in the streets when the whole thing collapses, because the Fatah party is not willing to recognize the PA, the PLO, Hamas, of course, not willing to recognize a Jewish presence here in this entire region. It's not just about Judea and Samaria, it's about the whole country. So maybe this is a good thing that Mahmoud Abbas continues to refuse to recognize the Jewish state of Israel. Maybe that's a good thing. But just to show you where his head is, those who believe, oh, we can talk to Mahmoud Abbas, no problem, he's our peace partner, he's a moderate, etc., that's not really the case, folks, at all. Barack Obama, President Obama, and I think it's important, even though this is a show about Israel, I think it's important to just to talk about, you know, the waning days of the Obama administration. What are his big accomplishments? Well, putting Iran on the path to nuclear weapons. Just the other day, he became the first incumbent U.S. president to visit Hiroshima, site of the world's first atomic bombing. Excuse me. And a gesture, Tokyo and Washington hope will showcase their alliance and reinvigorate efforts to rid the world of nuclear arms. President Obama, this is what he's spending his time doing. He spends his time picking on Israel. He spends his time hanging out in Cuba. And now he didn't officially apologize for what happened in Hiroshima, but he essentially did, going over there and making his presence felt over there in Japan. He said, we come to mourn the dead, including 100,000 Japanese men, women, and children, thousands of Koreans, a dozen Americans who were held prisoner. Their souls speak to us. Now, you know, nobody likes war, and certainly not nuclear war, but where would we be today? Would we even be around if the United States did not bomb Hiroshima and Nagasaki, thus ending the Second World War? Where would we be today? And why would we, or why would we, as I guess the leaders of the Western world, President Obama representing that group, why would he go and essentially apologize, at least make a an appearance or a photo op over there? Why doesn't he go and try to spend some time in Syria working that out with 450,000 dead now here in the year 2016? Many more killed in Syria than died in the bombing of Hiroshima. So the president, again, just showing what his priorities are, showing that he is just trying to weaken and weaken the role of the United States as a superpower. And again, it isn't Israel directly, this story, but it affects Israel, especially with that type of mentality. And we'll have to see whether President Hillary Clinton, if that comes to be, we'll have to see what her mentality is. Hope it doesn't come to that. Back to local news here, and you are listening to Israel Uncensored on the LandOfIsrael.com radio network. My name is Josh Haston, the 30th of May, 2016. For those who are commemorating Memorial Day in the United States, I hope you have a meaningful day. I grew up in the U.S., and I know Memorial Day was not about remembering the troops. At least when I grew up, it was about having barbecues, etc., something you don't see here in Israel. Here, it's very, very different. Memorial Day, maybe things have changed over there, I don't know. But those of you commemorating Memorial Day, hope you have a meaningful day in the United States today. Hamas, according to the Jerusalem Post, is siphoning off 95% of the cement transferred into Gaza, intended to rebuild homes for its military purposes, Foreign Ministry Director General Dory Gold said the other day. He said, quote, from our own investigation, we found that out of every 100 sacks of cement that come into Gaza from Israel, only 5 or 6 are transferred to civilians. He said this during the UN World Humanitarian Summit in Turkey. Why are we transferring cement over to Gaza? I understand we want to be humanitarian, but if 9 out of 10 bags, or 5 out of 6, as he says, are going to Hamas, are being used in the terror tunnels, are being used to manufacture rockets, we need to rethink policy. Just the other day, again, and I say again because this happens all the time, near Hebron, on its way to the Gaza border crossing, security forces here in Israel uncovered an entire shipment of materials to be used to manufacture rockets and to keep building these terror tunnels. They found pipes, they found motors, they found all this equipment that the Hamas was trying to sneak in via Judea and Samaria into Gaza. Yet we continue, and we're proud of it. I see on Twitter how proud Israel is. Today we transferred X amount of truckloads of material for the people in Gaza. We're proud of it. We shouldn't be proud of what we're doing. We are handing them, admittingly, we are handing them over materials which they are using, we're going to use, to fire rockets and to create more terror tunnels. This is not something we should be proud of. This is a huge, huge problem, and we need to rethink what we're doing. We need to rethink policy when it comes to transferring material, which we admit is going straight to Hamas. Other examples here: in February, according to the J Post, crossing authority inspectors, together with the Israel Security Services, foiled an attempt to smuggle commercial multi-copter drones into Gaza. Then again, a little bit later, the customs officials and the security forces intercepted a shipment of 15 tons of sulfuric acid en route to Gaza for making explosives. What do you think they're using this for? Are they using sulfuric acid in the schools to build hospitals, etc.? This is a big fat joke, but it's not funny. We're not laughing because it's just going to blow up in our faces, literally. The IDF over the weekend actually struck Gaza after there were rockets fired into Israel. This is the end of last week. And it's just another pattern of rockets coming in, IDF responding. I won't call it a cycle of violence. I won't fall for that trap used in the mainstream media. But it's a cycle of stupidity, how we know where their rocket launching cells are. We know where their launch commanders are. And we're just waiting for the rockets to come in order to respond. I've said this for years now. If we know that they are planning to fire rockets, we know where the rockets are located, why not preempt and take them out? You'll argue, well, then they'll go ahead and fire more rockets. They're firing rockets anyway. So why not try to protect the residents of the South, show strength, send a message that we're not going to tolerate the rockets, especially that we know where they are. Let's take care of business so the people in the South can sleep. And again, obviously, it's much better now than it was in 2008, 2006, etc. But the rockets are still trickling in. Here's another story here. Two Palestinian men are in custody for allegedly raping and urinating on a mentally disabled Israeli woman in South Tel Aviv. Police originally said it was nationalistically motivated, this crime. Yesterday, they said maybe it wasn't, etc. I mean, this happened on Independence Day earlier this month. A 20-year-old Israeli victim. It happened in her aunt's apartment in Tel Aviv. Allegedly, one of the terrorists, and I'll call them terrorists, who carried out this rape, filmed the incident. And in addition to raping her, urinating on her, and spitting on her, they were shouting, these two guys, and there was a third, the one who was filming, anti-Semitic slurs at her, threatening to murder her and her family. This was unfortunately downplayed. This information was not released for, I believe, 10 days or so. And I think this is like another attempt by the establishment to try to lull us into thinking everything is fine. This was not revealed. And I'll even have to agree with one of the merits MKs, and this is something I rarely do agree with something Meretz says here, but MK Michal Rosen from Meretz has asked Public Security Minister Gilad Erdan to clarify why police waited more than a week to alert the public about a gang rape in South Tel Aviv, saying doing so may have helped a fugitive suspect evade arrest. Quote, at the time that one of the suspects is on the run, police prevented the publication of the case. It's possible that this decision has prevented the police from catching the third suspect. Again, this is MK from the Meretz party, Michal Rosen. So she wrote this letter to Erdan saying that hiding stories like this seriously harms the process cases like this deserve. And asked whether this was a case of neglect. So this is a case here which could be seen as a local police issue. Based on what I read before, this sounds like it's a nationalistic crime carried out against a young, mentally disabled 20-year-old Jewish woman who was raped and who was urinated on, spit on, and called a bunch of nasty things pertaining to her Judaism. And I can't explain why. I don't have the answer why it took 10 days or so before police alerted the public and made this information public. I don't know why. My theory is that they're trying to downplay these type of attacks, trying not to arouse fear. That's also my theory why as to none of these rock attacks get reported. Trying to calm the public, make sure everyone thinks everything's okay, carry on with your daily lives until you have a boulder, as was the case yesterday, smashed into your windshield by a 20-year-old or 17-year-old jihadist on the side of the road. Ironically, in yesterday's attack, again, I mentioned it at the beginning of the show, where a mother and her sister, two toddlers, or a toddler and a newborn, were attacked. The Arab who threw these boulders, large rocks, at the car was hiding behind an army concrete slab, which were, you know, recently and throughout Judea and Samaria, the army put these big concrete slabs on the sides of the roads with numbers. So in case, let's say, your car breaks down or there's some type of security incident, you can then just say, call up the local authorities and say, I am standing here on the side of the road by, let's say, Etzion, Ayin Etzion, number 36. That's what's written on these huge slabs of concrete. So in yesterday's case, the Arab used this concrete slab, if you will, it's tall, on the side of the road. He used that as something to hide behind and emerged from behind this barricade and then started throwing these boulders at the woman. So again, it's using what we're trying to do for defensive measures, using it against us. Maybe that is a message that we need to take to heart, that all of these defensive measures, maybe it's the right thing to do to have labeled slabs of concrete on the road. Maybe it's a smart idea, but this is another defensive measure. It's saying, okay, we need to prepare for the inevitable because it's going to happen. These rock attacks and, God forbid, more. We talked about last week there was a shooting near Tekoa. It's a defensive measure being used against us. I think that's the message we need to take from this is we need to go on the offensive and take care of business, go into the villages and weed out the terrorists from these villages. I think that's the message we need to learn. I started the show here today, Israel Uncensored, on the landofisrael.com radio network, saying we weren't going to go into politics. I guess we're going to brush it just a bit, because I think there's a very important article which was written here on Front Page Magazine the other day by Daniel Greenfield. And the title is it only the fascist left that can save Israel from fascism? And then he asks, does Israel's fascist left know that it's fascist? It's a brilliant article, I believe, talking about the hypocrisy of the left, if you will. And I'm not crazy about the definitions, left, right, etc. But he says that former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak declared recently that the new Israeli government coalition has, quote, been infected by seeds of fascism. Barak, he points out, actually, had been a minister of a coalition government with Netanyahu and Avigdor Lieberman. Everyone's getting up in Avigdor Lieberman's business, the new defense minister. And here you have a government where Barak himself was, in fact, part of, he was the defense minister with Netanyahu and Lieberman was the foreign minister. And but when he was in the coalition, Barak, were there seeds of fascism there, asks Daniel Greenfield. In other words, he's calling out Ehud Barak and many others for what looks like hypocrisy on the part of the so-called left. He says departing Minister of Defense Bogi Yaalon is being mourned as the victim of a fascist purge, even though he left of his own free will after being offered the foreign ministry. Instead, Yaalon left to try and found his own party. It's a strange kind of fascist purge to be offered one of the top jobs in the government instead of a cigarette and blindfold and a spot in front of a concrete wall. He's pointing out the fact that, no, the government now is not a fascist government. The left has embraced Yaalon as its newfound Galileo, praising him as a voice of conscience and a martyr to Netanyahu's horrible fascism, in quotes, of course. They forgot that only 2 years ago, they were calling for Yaalon's head after he made some comments about Secretary of State John Kerry, calling him obsessive, saying the only thing that can save us is for John Kerry to win the Nobel Prize and leave us alone. In other words, when Bogi Yaalon was saying things that the left did not like, they were accusing him of being an extremist. Now that he's changed, everything's kosher with him. It's not him. He's not the extremist. He's not the fascist anymore. Now it's Avigdor Lieberman and, of course, Prime Minister Netanyahu. And the article, I'm not going to read the whole thing here, but it's, I think it's a very important read to see the hypocrisy from those. Here, I'll just leave you with this on this note. The Israeli left, he says, has no concept of what democracy, freedom, or fascism mean. It's a privileged class, he says, of the left, which measures all things as good or bad based on its entitlement. It's talentless academics and artists who have achieved their posts through the political connections of their protexia. Those are connections. Rather than the merit, rather than the merest hint of merit, are convinced that any criticism of them is fascist and ought to be banned. In other words, when you criticize the left, they believe that you're a fascist. If you criticize them, you're a fascist, but they have the right to criticize everybody, and they determine what fascism is, and the hypocrisy. It just reeks of hypocrisy here on the left. And again, I hate those terms, but this is what he says here, Daniel Greenfield. So I check it out. Go to Front Page Magazine, and really, it's really eye-opening if you want to understand the hypocrisy here of some of those parties, I guess, which can be defined as left here in Israel. If you are just joining us here, it is Monday, the 30th of May, 2016. This is Josh Haston here on the landofisrael.com radio network from Jerusalem. I'm here with my main man, Binyamin Breski, engineer extraordinaire. It is a beautiful sunny day. We had a little bit of winter over the weekend. It went back to like cold and a little bit of rain, actually, drops of rain. But now I think that's it, Ben. I think we are headed finally towards summer, whether you like it or not. I mean, I think we're on the way there, beach season, which I love very much, even though I'll always love the winter. Wall Street Journal had a very important editorial the other day talking about the Democratic Party in the U.S. The title here is Democrats versus Israel. This, again, a Wall Street Journal editorial. It says here, not too long ago, Democrats were America's pro-Israel party. However, if that party isn't dead, it's close. And it points out here that this week, Bernie Sanders named James Zogby of the Arab American Institute and Professor Cornel West to the party's platform drafting committee. Mr. West offered a flavor of his, quote, even-handedness on Facebook in 2014. Again, when this we're talking about referring here to Israeli policies when it comes to Israel. During Israel's last war with Hamas, he said the following, let's not be deceived. The Israeli massacre of innocent Palestinians, especially the precious children, is a crime against humanity. The rockets of Hamas indeed are morally wrong and politically ineffective, but these crimes pale in the face of the U.S.-supported Israeli slaughters of innocent civilians. Here you have a top aide to Bernie Sanders, and that's his policy. That's what he believes. And then Mr. Zogby, of course, we've known him for years. He endorses the BDS, Boycott Divestment Sanctions Movement against Israel, saying it's legitimate and a moral response to Israeli policy. These are the leaders here in Bernie Sanders' election campaign. So if you're thinking about voting for Sanders because he's a Jew, etc., maybe you should think twice. If Israel's your priority, and I hope if you're listening to this show, Israel's your priority. Here are just some statistics here about the Democratic Party in general. A Pew poll from April found that while moderate Democrats still sympathize with Israel over Palestinians, 53% to 19%, self-identified liberal Democrats now tilt to the Palestinians, 40% to 33%. The shame of all this, says the editorial, is that support for a robust liberal democracy like Israel should come naturally to the Democratic Party. Last we checked, it was better to be a woman or a homosexual or environmentalist or political dissident in Tel Aviv than in Gaza. As they write their party's platform, Democrats might ask why Israel, the one Middle Eastern country that fully shares their values, should be the one they are most the one they most seek to condemn. Ironic, is it? Isn't it? Hippocratic. That's for sure. Going back to the local scene here in Israel, Hezbollah says that they are digging tunnels on the border. We really need to stop and reassess. And I think it's clear to me, at least, the policy. That was Ehud Barak. We talked about him before, Prime Minister, in the year 2000 when Israel pulled its troops out of that border area up in Lebanon. And then, of course, Israel pulled out and inspired the Oslo War, or Second Intifada, whatever you call it, number one. And number two, we're now commemorating 10 years since the Second Lebanon War, I believe directly as a result of Israel pulling out of southern Lebanon. So Hezbollah here says on Wednesday, brags that it is digging tunnels along the border, first reported by a Lebanese source, translated by Memory, the Middle East Media Research Institute. Hezbollah says that despite heavy losses in its war in Syria, quote, Israel cannot ignore the strengthening of the security and stability equation on both sides of the Palestine-Lebanon border. Obviously not saying the word Israel. Hezbollah says that it has succeeded in establishing a balance of terror that has made southern Lebanon the most secure region in the entire Middle East. They're even calling themselves terrorists, I guess, saying a balance of terror. And the article written celebrating here, they're celebrating the 16th anniversary of Israel's withdrawal from the security zone in Lebanon. They call it Liberation Day in Hezbollah enclaves over there in Lebanon. So, of course, that is our security forces say that Hezbollah is, in fact, our biggest threat, with perhaps 100,000, if not more, rockets aimed at Israel, which they claim can reach even into the Negev Desert, southern Israel, all the way from up there. So another future war, perhaps inevitable. I mean, I just hope that Hezbollah stays busy with the situation in Syria, fighting against the Sunnis and the Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups, and the two of them just keep fighting each other, and they ignore Israel. But they are saying that even with all that going on, they are planning, taking a page out of the Hamas terror textbook, and they are planning for the next war altercation with Israel by digging these tunnels. Israel better get on this really, really quickly, like we are down in down near Gaza, I hope. I mean, apparently we are. It seems like we are. We have to deal with this problem ASAP. Turning to the BDS front, and, you know, a lot of good-willed and good-intentioned people are trying to fight the BDS. And again, from what I understand, and I believe Carolyn Glick and others, Dan Diker, made it clear on this program, the BDS is not hurting at this point Israel economically, significantly at least. But you have these foreign entities in the European Union and in the U.S., etc., who are turning to BDS, trying to signal out Israel, trying to destroy Israel, really. That's what the goal of BDS is. But this just makes you ill. When you have, reported by the J Post, 20 Israeli academics who are encouraging BDS, Israelis who are encouraging BDS, according to this report, 20 academics have encouraged the American Anthropological Association to boycott Israeli higher academic institutions, including some of those that they work for. That's craziness. Im Tirtzu, the organization, pointed this out the other day. According to the report, prominent professors who enjoy salaries provided by the Israeli taxpayer, we're paying their salaries, encourage, legitimize, and often promote boycott efforts, including those that directly harm the institutions at which they work. And what is so important about this plan BDS is that the American Anthropological Association has 10,000 members, and they're voting whether to officially adopt a boycott of Israel, to refrain from formal collaborations with Israeli academic institutions. But the worst part of all of this, the worst part is that 20 Israelis are encouraging them to do so. They live here. They teach here. The taxpayers pay their salaries. They work at Israeli institutions, and they are trying to promote BDS. They're trying to encourage their own colleagues in the field of anthropology to boycott the state of Israel. Can it get worse than that, folks? I don't know if it can get much worse than that. I mean, we're dealing with rock attacks and these rockets and all this other stuff. Our enemies are lobbing over at us. Okay, that's bad enough. But then you have a group of Israelis who are promoting BDS. It cannot get much worse than that, folks. Speaking of BDS, in Holland, what Tove Lazaroff calls in the J Post a huge setback to Israel. The Dutch foreign minister said Thursday that calls to boycott the Jewish state fall within the limits of free speech. This undermines intensive diplomatic efforts to sway European capitals to outlaw the BDS movement. This guy, Bert Koenders, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, the Dutch foreign minister said, you know, we're not going to change our policy. The government policy is we're against BDS, but you can't. Those who want a BDS, boycott Israel, etc., that's cool because it's freedom of speech. No problem there. The Israeli foreign ministry responded that once free speech becomes a pretext for allowing hate speech, it is no longer legitimate. This actually is foreign ministry spokesperson Emmanuel Nachshon lashing back at the statements coming out of the Netherlands there. So BDS gaining legitimacy in certain circles in Europe, saying it's freedom of speech when we all know that they're talking about the destruction of the Jewish state, and Israel believes it should be illegal to BDS our country. On the other hand here, you have a prominent British donor who is withholding $1 million a donation to Ben-Gurion University of the Negev to protest. The school's sponsorship of a conference includes members of Breaking the Silence, British businessman Michael Gross, being a longtime member of their board of governors, said he is withholding his donation. Next Monday, Ben-Gurion University will officially sponsor, that's actually today. Today, they are sponsoring a conference by leading figures and supporters of Breaking the Silence, effectively financed by the Israeli government. Here's another case where the Israeli government is not only are we paying the salaries of these teachers who are BDSing us, but here you have a conference which is being financed by Israel. He decided that he's not going to support the university, withhold $1 million. Because Breaking the Silence, he believes, he says, is a group of self-hating Jews, traitors to the country, and they should not be allowed to continue under the claim of, and should not be given a platform under the claim of academic freedom. Again, that's British businessman Michael Gross. The university denies that he ever pledged any money to them, and they believe that the conference should continue. No problem Breaking the Silence, freedom of speech, etc. You have another case, two cases, one BDS in the Netherlands. Here you have a local case of anti-Israel haters given a platform. And the question is, when does freedom of speech end, and when does hate of Israel, hate speech, when does that begin? That is really the question here. And I'm proud of Michael Gross for withholding the funds from Ben-Gurion. I believe that Breaking the Silence is not legitimate. Their materials published in English, if they really want to change within the army here in Israel or the situation, everything they put out would be in Hebrew to try to affect change. It's clearly a PR stunt. It's an anti-Israel group, in my opinion, 100%. And I think it's a good thing that Gross is withholding the money until they get their act together. Finishing on a positive note here, in spite of the BDS and the haters out there, Elton John rocked it out here in Israel on Thursday night, Park HaYarkon, Tel Aviv. 40,000 Israelis in attendance. And I did not go to the show, but for the first time ever, and again, I don't know how it's even legal. And Ben, maybe you can explain it to me. You had people at the concert And you know, now you can play live videos via Facebook or Twitter. You can send live videos. And you had people at the concert who are broadcasting via their iPhones and, you know, their Samsung Galaxies, whatever, broadcasting the Elton John show live to the world on their Facebook pages live. I mean, it must be legal. You're allowed to broadcast the Facebook video. Ben doesn't know. I don't know either. So I was sitting in the comfort of my home just scrolling down Facebook feed, and people were, you know, putting up live videos from the concert. So I got to see parts of the concert, some of his best songs, for free. So I don't know if that's legal or not. I don't know what the story is there, but that's not the point. The point is, Elton John, every review I've read said he's still got it at the age of 69. He's rocking it. And he played all of the classics, and he played some new songs. He said the following: "Thank you so much, Tel Aviv. We couldn't have asked for a better audience, for a nicer place to play." Reflecting on his impressive 47 years in the business, he said, "The one constant is you guys, the audience." So this was the opening night of his European tour, his latest concert tour, opened in Tel Aviv, and he said some nice things about Israel up there on the stage. Take that, BDS. Take that, Israel haters, those who won't come and perform in Israel, making up all this nonsense, accusing Israel of a bunch of different things which are not true. Elton John, who wields a tremendous amount of influence with his fan base, sticking it to the BDSers, whether he deliberately or not. Nevertheless, it's great that he performed. It's great that he was here in Israel performing to the Israeli people. Anyway, that is it for today. My name is Josh Haston. This is Israel Uncensored on thelandofisrael.com radio network. Let me know what you think of the show. Get in touch with me. Josh@thelandofisrael.com is my email. On Facebook, Josh Haston, H-A-S-T-E-N. On Twitter, @JewofZion. Again, big shout out and big thank you to Binyamin Bresky, engineer extraordinaire. Have a great week, everybody. Enjoy the now spring, headed to summer weather if you're here in Israel. Be safe wherever you are in this wonderful world of ours. My name is Josh Haston, signing out from Jerusalem, Israel, the capital of the Jewish people.
Rabbi Isaac Nissenbaum, one of the founders of the religious Zionist Mizrahi movement, wrote, "The objective of Mizrahi is the total revival of our nation in all its aspects, to revive Judaism in our hearts and to revive our hearts for Judaism, to revive the land for the nation and to revive the nation on the abundance of the land. The objective of Mizrahi is the total revival of Judaism in all its aspects through its depth, width, and height. It is a Judaism whose legislators redeem, whose farmers are prophets, whose businessmen are sages. It is a Judaism which creates spiritual and physical values, synthesizing them into one unit, destroying the houses of bondage and building its huts of freedom." The Land of Israel Network is powered by the Mizrahi World Movement.
My name is Tommy Waller. I'm the founder and president of HaYovel. More than 12 years ago, I made my first trip to the Land of Israel. What I saw and heard changed my life forever. I stood with Nir Levi, an Orthodox Jewish man, in his vineyard in Samaria on the Mountain of Blessing. There, he opened his Bible and read the prophecy of Jeremiah that said, "You shall yet plant vineyards on the mountains of Samaria." This fall, during the grape harvest, we have the opportunity to join Israel as it celebrates the 50th year of the liberation of Jerusalem, Judea, and Samaria. Come join us as we witness the unveiling of prophecy in the Jubilee year. Come be a part of the biblical narrative. Go to HaYovel.com, that's HaYovel.com, to find out more, and I hope to see you there.